Hey, this is John Bokenkamp. Welcome to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers. Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers. Welcome to a special episode of The Blacklist Exposed. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I am Agent Aaron Peterson, here to redeem ourselves for not covering every episode of Redemption. Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss the entire season of The Blacklist Redemption in this special episode before The Blacklist returns Thursday, April 20th for a two-hour special event at 9 p.m. Eastern. That's right. It's going to be on a little earlier. 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, 8 Central Time on NBC. Show notes and intel for this episode of The Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com.
Hey, we're both back this week, and we're ready to go on the wild ride to the end of season four. We got a bit of a different show for you this week, and then back to the basics when we return for The Blacklist to find out who actually poisoned Red. It was probably Dembe, but I'm sure he's working for somebody.
I told you it wasn't Dembe. Nobody believes me. And now the previews, they believe me.
Yeah. So to help with that, to find out what actually is going on, we invited a few of our friends to Chicago to chat with all of you, the fans, next Saturday, April 22nd, from 3 to 4 p.m. at C2E2. That's going to be held at McCormick Place.
Yeah, it turns out that while we were on our little spring hiatus, not only is John Bokenkamp coming, but we did receive confirmation that Harry Lennox and Amir Arison, and that's right, Cooper and Aram, we'll be joining him for a panel discussion you do not want to miss. This is your chance to ask questions about the show to John or go deeper into the characters of Cooper and Aram. Tickets are on sale now at c2e2.com/tickets and are $70 for the whole weekend. There's a lot of great stuff to do if you want to check it out. Or $40 for Saturday, the day our panel is on.
Yes, yes. The Stranger Things cast will be there. Zachary Levi was confirmed
to
be there.
You're so excited, aren't you?
And I can't go because now they're only going to be there on Sunday, and I got plans on Sunday. And I'm like, oh, son of a gun.
I wonder if Millie can get a restraining order for a creepy old guy that is a huge fan. Well, I guess there's a lot of them. Never mind.
Probably. Yeah. We also want to hang out with all of you guys if you're going to be there. So if you're coming to the panel or in Chicago area in general, Saturday, April 22nd, let us know by emailing us at theblacklist@goldenspiralmedia.com. That's theblacklist@goldenspiralmedia.com. We need to get a head count to make some plans. So if you are listening and do plan to attend, email us right now. Pause the show. theblacklist@goldenspiralmedia.com. Again, it's April 22nd, Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. in room S402 at C2E2 in Chicago. Don't miss it. It's going to be great.
It's going to be a gas, I would say. Huh. Uh-huh. See what I did? See? I did that. You didn't do it. You fail.
It's overused. I left it on purpose, but whatever.
Hey, how was that little episode of yours, huh? I got you some words.
It was great. It was balanced. It was, you know, given where everybody sat in their theory camps or what have you, there were some kerfuffings that wasn't completely a balanced episode from like the fan grouping perspective. But I think overall, I think it was very insightful and had some good points that they brought up. I thought it was very well conducted, and it was everything I hope for. I mean, they were the ones that volunteered to come forward and speak. So
yeah, we're talking about the fan roundtable that Troy had. I took the month of March off because I did not have time for anything. So Troy managed it, and I thought it came out great. Basically, he wanted to give a voice to people that had, I wouldn't say negative, but had different reactions to the show than we usually talk about each week. And they wanted to discuss them and debate them and really just discuss them. And Troy gave him a forum to do that. And I thought it came out great. A lot of people were kind of ripping all over my boy Troy. But, hey, that's what you get. I'm glad I wasn't a part of that episode. I'm like, I'm just sitting back laughing. I'm like, you dumb. You're getting yelled at. I like it. But you handled it great. I thought it was a great episode. It was really interesting to hear points of view that I see on the internet. But every time somebody says that, they get kind of beat down. So we don't like that.
Well, because you can't express their entire thought in 140 characters. It's a little challenging, so...
No, that's why you use memes and GIFs, my friend. That's why the world is surrounds memes and GIFs.
There you go.
Or is it GIFs?
We're going to have that argument again.
All right, well, let's get into this one.
Yeah, we got lots to cover today. So on with the show as Aaron and I seek some redemption.
Redemption. This will be a bit different than our normal show, as we will be talking about the season as a whole. So first, we will get those of you that did not watch the series up to speed on the basic story elements overall, and then share a few highlights from each of the episodes. And then we'll get into the characters like we normally do and talk about their progression throughout the series. Then we'll take comments from you, the special agents, at the end of the episode.
So my question for you, Aaron, let's just grade the series as a whole. 8 episodes done. We just watched the finale last night. What did you think about Redemption? Standalone, great. Need some help. Want a season 2? Where do you stand?
Okay. I'm
putting you on the spot first this week because you put me on the spot first last time.
This is where you're going to hear my, for people that have ever seen Dr. Detroit, this is my, oh, ma, that's my, oh, mom voice. No one gets that joke. I am of a divided camp. If I'm being perfectly candid, I am of a divided camp. I thought the first 4 episodes really, there was nothing that made it exciting television for me. I felt like it was pretty standard stuff. Now, a lot of that is because I'm kind of in a serialized kick. So formulaic TV, episode, just standalone episodes and all that as a bulk for a whole series like CSI and those kind of things, they don't really speak to me a whole lot. I did like some of the aspects of it, but I think they were still finding their footing. The back 4, though, started to come together and tell a more cohesive story, and it worked a lot better for me on the back end. I thought Terry O'Quinn was a fantastic addition to the show. And really, like, especially those last couple episodes, I mean, just played the hell out of it. I mean, every scene he was in, he lit up, no matter what he was doing. Even the scene where he just, like, laying in a wheelchair or just hanging back, and he's just like, hey, what's up? He brought the series to life. And that made all the difference in the world. Eddie Gathegi, Solomon, probably my favorite character of the main 4. He seems to have a lot of fun. When he goes bad, he's great at being bad. Famke or Scotty Hargrave, I know we always do characters, but it's early and I'm not quite there yet. But as much as I love Famke, I didn't feel like her character got a lot to do until the last couple episodes. And the cliffhanger part of it, when you have a show that's only 8 episodes, okay, here's my big concern about this, okay? Blacklist Redemption, I think, was supposed to be its own thing, right? We agree?
Yes.
Maybe some ties to the Blacklist, but really its own thing. Especially in the back half, a lot of the parts I like more about the series were the connections to the Blacklist as it went. But I was concerned because the way that the series left off, if it doesn't come back, they're going to have to resolve that in the actual Blacklist, right?
Yes.
So to me, that takes away from the Blacklist, takes away from my show, if that makes any sense. Unless you find a way to bring Howard over, because I think Howard's just fantastic. I put Terry O'Quinn in the Blacklist forever, as far as I'm concerned. I think him and Spader going at it could be just brilliant TV. But that I didn't like that, because I was hoping it would wrap up in season 8, at least give you enough to, okay, you want a little bit more, but the basic crux of this story is wrapped up. I didn't feel like it was. I felt like instead it put the pressure on our show, so to speak, and didn't, and guys, I know you're probably listening. I don't want to make you feel bad about your TV show. It was good. It didn't gel as much as I would have liked. I would probably honestly give it about a B-.
So I'm going to agree to disagree with you, because I felt that for the crux of the story of the 8 episodes, I thought it wrapped up very nicely. There was an end point where everything that we needed to know about everything that had been set up at the start of the season did actually pay off at the end. Where I agree with you, though, is that if they were to bring this back and say it doesn't come back as Redemption, there is a huge, huge challenge to get the rest of Blacklist fandom up to speed as to where we ended this series in order to work it back into the main show.
Right.
So I think that's the challenge that they're going to be faced against, is that if this does not come back as a standalone, then if they do want to bring these characters back, and they should, because these characters were fantastic. I mean, Solomon, we already know, was fantastic from the Blacklist, but if you didn't see Eddie in this, oh man, Eddie was phenomenal. There's especially one scene in episode 5 where he is just on point. And of course, Terry O'Quinn, I mean, gosh, every time that man was on the screen, it was like oozing cool. And him and Red in a scene together, toe-to-toe, going back and forth, would be, I think, something people would just squee about for years beyond the show's end. It was just fantastic. But overall, the challenge I had with this is that I came in with expectations, right? I came in with I wanted to see Tom almost play a different character every week, that international man of mystery kind of thing. A little alias, yeah. I wanted Famke, Scotty's character, to be more like Scotty, like, I'm going to grab your hand and put your hand in my boob kind of character. Like, she was more...
Trey, you just went somewhere weird, but that's cool.
But it was that more powerful, more meeting. And then in that opening sequence where she's torturing the guy on the plane.
That was great.
We saw, mm-hmm. That was awesome. But the rest of it was almost, God, I hate to say it, but a little wet blanket for the first couple episodes. She's just all mopey and whiny about finding her son, and she doesn't really have that forcefulness. You get a little bit of character building from her in the second episode when a family friend gets in trouble. By the end, she's a little bit more in that aggressive mode, which is what I was hoping we would see for most of the show. But again, she's also not the forefront of the episode. I mean, this was supposed to be her show as the lead. I would assume she would have been more in the forefront, and it almost felt like she was a secondary character a lot of times.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And in terms of Tom, which is the big one, I guess. I mean, he left the Blacklist to go do this. He was fine. I really liked his moments with Liz and with Terry O'Quinn, Howard. Sorry, I keep calling them by their actual names, and I know we try not to do that, and it's just habit, I guess, because we haven't talked about this series before. So right. Terry O'Quinn, Howard, I liked his moments with Scotty, but I would have liked that, because if you're going to make the dare, because in the first episode, they make that dare, right? Where they're dancing on the dance floor and it almost,
the ew scene,
the creepy ew scene where, you know, she's like, hey, come on, you know, make this look sexy or whatever. And he's like, you're my mom, in his mind. If you're going to make that dare, if you're going to make that step, either go for it and just play it out like through a couple episodes, like maybe she actually has a crush on Tom. Let's just weird us out. Just go for it. Or don't introduce it at all. That's kind of how I felt about that.
Yeah.
But I realize it's good. It's TV, so that they have to do that so that they remind the audience that she is his mom and she misses her son. But I don't think somebody would actually talk about their son they lost like 30 years ago that often. I just don't. I think for somebody who's so closed off and reserved, that just seemed out of character, I guess. But I'm also, what do I know about her character? I know what they told me, and according to the show, she does talk about that. That's a moment. That's the only moment in her life she reflects on often.
Yeah, and it drives all of her purpose and drive for everything that she's doing.
Yeah,
which is the crux of the show. So, just a general overview of basically what happened in 8 episodes. You have this woman, Scotty Hargrave, who's taken over Halcyon Aegis, who is a company that does the things that the government doesn't want to do. It's kind of a subcontractor in that regard. And she has wrestled that company away from her husband, Howard Hargrave, played by Terry O'Quinn. And we don't know throughout the course of the series if Howard is a little beautiful mind, a little Rain Man kind of thing, or if he's truly a brilliant mind and Scotty's the bad person. So we go through this. Is Scotty the good one? Is Howard the good one? And Tom has to play that card throughout the course of the series with, of course, the help of his friend, Mr. Solomon, and a one Tawny Cypress playing Nez Rowan's character. And as the series progresses and plays out, we get a couple case of the weeks along the way with maybe two or so mythology type episodes. And the whole thing is around getting Howard back into control of Halcyon Aegis, taking down Scotty because of some big project that they call Whitehall, which we find out isn't really a project. It's actually a guy who is also a little beautiful mind. And they're trying to develop the first quantum computing device. So did you like that concept of the quantum computing coming into this play and the fact that the prototype actually does exist?
It was a little mind-blowing because I had to – because I know IT.
1 plus 1 plus 2 plus 1 kind of thing?
Yeah, 1 plus 1 plus 2 plus 1. No. I didn't – it took me a little bit to catch up. And I know IT. I'm actually very familiar with it. I've worked in IT. So it was an interesting – way to take it. I thought that was actually pretty cool, and I really liked the ending twist, even though I think we kind of saw it coming as we ramped up toward the end. But because of Terry O'Quinn, honestly, not because I didn't suspect it, because in TV you have to look for the double cross, but as we got there, Terry O'Quinn sold me that, oh no, Howard wouldn't do that. He's too sweet. He wouldn't do that. He's just a crazy old man. Yeah. So he got me there up until the last episode. Had me duped. But I like the quantum computing. I thought that was a pretty cool touch.
And that was probably one of the most consistent things, I think, throughout the series was, or season, I should say, because we don't know if it's renewed or not yet. But through the season was the tech. I mean, we have the Artex network. They refer to the Artex network a few times, so Blacklist faithful would obviously pick up on that right away. Mm-hmm. But the Artex network is able to, see everything, do everything, and then it goes on with all of the gadgets that Dumont was playing with and showing. One of the big ones was what would you call it? A Houdini magic trick. They were trying to break into a country with a group of weapons, a stock of weapons in a truck, and they have a mirror that they put up so that you can actually, it's like a two-way mirror see-through, but you don't see the weapons. Mm. It makes it look like the truck was empty.
Right.
Until some cold air got some condensation on it and ruined the illusion. But I think the tech was probably the most consistent thing, because we're moving along towards this big reveal of it's all about computing power and what would happen if someone could have a quantum computing device, and what would that change the landscape when you think of it from, power, control, financial, government, etc. I think that was a really great thing that the tech at least stayed consistent throughout the episode season.
Make up your mind. What are you talking about? Do you want to do some episodic thoughts before?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Let's go ahead and we'll just kind of run down. Now, the first episode was Leland Bray. We talked about that in our 2-hour kind of wrap up back in February. But this is the one that introduces us to the Blacklist. It's they have to kidnap the lady from the pool in order to flush out the guy. And then they kidnap the mom and the son, and then eventually later on towards the episode, they have to take a bomb literally out of the mother in order to make sure everybody's safe. Just how did you, knowing that first episode, we talked about it back in February, how do you think that first episode compared to the rest of the season? Did you feel it was stylized in a way that was different than the rest of it, or was it, kind of the same as you went through, Aaron?
I thought it was pretty similar. I mean, it was kind of the international A team coming together, and that's really what it was. It put the team together. It was a little different than what people expected. Way different than the Blacklist, I would say. And it was I liked that first episode quite a bit. I mean, and reflection. I don't remember how I felt the first time I watched it, but when I rewatched it for this, then I did like it a little bit better. Probably because I knew how the show was structured a little better. And it kind of fit. I just, like I said when we talked about it originally, I felt like the pilot was way too Blacklist heavy. I think if you're going to make a spinoff, you have to make it stand on its own. Part of that, I think, is the title. I know it sounds stupid, but I think they should have went with a different title to separate it more. By throwing the Blacklist in there, people do have expectations just because it's in there. Just because the character's from the show doesn't mean the title has to be the same. I think people would be able to figure it out pretty quick that are fans of the Blacklist. So I think the title affected the show as we went. But
that's funny, though, because when you said title, I thought you were talking about the title of the episode.
No, the series, the title of the series.
Gotcha.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying, though? Because
I do, totally.
Every week you go back and it's called The Blacklist Redemption. So you have, I think, a lot of people in their minds an expectation because you did associate it with the Blacklist, where it's... And it's not really fair because, NCIS does the same thing. But if you go watch their shows, New York, Vegas, Hawaii, whatever the hell cities are in right now, I have no idea if they're even on anymore. but those kind of shows were always very similar. This is nothing like the show that it's referring to. So I think it should have had a different title to kind of make it, to separate it, to help people that don't watch The Blacklist find it, that sort of thing.
Well, I'm going to compare it to Star Trek a little bit in this case with the series, because in Star Trek, when you went to the movies, the even numbered movies were the ones that were good, right? Wrath of Khan, Voyage Home, Undiscovered Country, etc., First Contact.
Which one had Christian Slater in it? Because that one was awesome.
Honestly, I do not remember, to tell you the truth.
This is something you should know, because he's in one of them. It's a very, very small cameo, but my God, it's Christian Slater. It's Christian Slater, eh? Does anybody even know who he is anymore? Because I love Christian Slater.
Pump up the volumes, all I got to say.
Mr. Robot, great baby. Great movie. Pump up the volume, Gleaming the Cube, which isn't even a skateboard term. Nobody cares, but I'm telling you, it's not.
But he's not in Redemption, so we can move on.
You know what? Sometimes I like to talk, Troy. So this is a podcast, what we do.
But this is not Star Trek. This is Redemption. And because of that, the odd numbered episodes, I think, were the best episodes throughout the course of the season. So episode number 2, Kevin Jensen. Now, this one did have a little bit of heart in it, and maybe this was good. I think the problem with episode 2 for me was that episode 1 was exactly what I expected of the series to be, that kind of Alias Mission Impossible type kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And episode 2 felt like an episode of The Blacklist. It really did. It was we have to go save this. What was it? It was a reporter.
Journalist
who's trying to expose human rights stuff in a foreign country. And what was it? It was Kyrgyzstan or something like that. It was a completely made up country. I thought that was funny. I was like, Kyrgyzstan. That's what it was. It was Kyrgyzstan. And I'm like, there's no Kyrgyzstan on a map. So they go to Kyrgyzstan to get this guy. And we find out that Scotty and her son Christopher played with this Kevin Jensen when they were growing up until Christopher's disappearance. And then she basically becomes like an adopted mother of Kevin. And so this is a personal case to her. And so they have to go in, and the U.S. is not going to want to be involved in this at all because there's tensions high. There's an election coming, and they want the airspace over it for some military reasons. So they don't want to upset relations. And they go in to find out that Kevin Jensen actually wasn't a journalist. He was working for the CIA. Go figure. And as they're trying to save him to get to the U.S. soil at the embassy, does Kevin get gunned down, not feet, from the embassy? And we see Tom actually run back into the gunfire to get the computer so that he could expose the human trafficking stuff, because he doesn't know that he's a CIA agent. And then, of course, he goes to try to save CPR to save Kevin, but to no avail. So it had a great heart. But from a Redemption perspective, I felt, OK, this is Blacklist. This isn't Redemption.
Oh, I see what you're saying. To a degree, yeah. I mean, I like that you had it. You're trying to establish a connection with Scotty and Tom. So basically, what I thought what the purpose of the episode was to say, Tom, look at Scotty. She does care about people and her past, and she's not this person that Howard wants you to believe. I think I was trying to establish that there's more to her than we see, which is what I got from the episode. And I thought the twist was, I mean, it was telegraphed a little bit, but it was good. I liked it. I didn't think he was going to make it out alive. Kudos for them for actually going through with it. I really kind of thought they weren't going to do it. They weren't going to kill him off, and they did. So, bye-bye, kid.
And the other reason I didn't think this was a great episode was because it was the only episode in the series where Howard doesn't make an appearance. So we got introduced to Howard and this whole big like conspiracy thing in the first episode, and then Howard like completely is non-existent, and we don't even talk about that in the second episode. So it was weird. It didn't seem like maybe it was out of sequence in a way, potentially.
Yeah, could have been.
But the story was really good. I mean, the story was good. It just didn't feel like it was a Redemption episode specifically.
Well, episode 3 is a really good one.
Oh my gosh. Independence USA. This is where we finally get off of the names, which is where I was having issue with the series, was we're calling these, it looked like Blacklister names, right? Leland Bray, Kevin Jensen. So we get to Independence USA and we're not on a Blacklist titling scheme. And this was where things really go crazy, because the U.S. actually crashes a plane somewhere in Russia completely full of passengers. And then you come to find out that they're all dead passengers. The whole body is like, you know, people dug up from graves, because they're trying to find a installation that the Russians have called Independence USA, which is a sleeper camp where they're training Russians to become Americans. And this is where we get to meet Nez Rowan a little bit more. It's her character episode, fleshing out. Her and Tom actually have to go into the town and pose as the spies to expose the thing. And what I love about it is that it actually exposes us to a larger Nez Rowan concept, in that they're actually being drugged by the water that they're drinking, because you can't drink the groundwater because of some chemical attack that happened. So they're drinking bottled water, which has drugs in it. You find out that Nez Rowan actually was a druggie at one point, got clean, and now because she has this fix, she has to go back, and she goes and finds her dealer to get drugs when she gets back to the States. So that was great from a Nez Rowan perspective and her character building. But the big reveal in this was that there are Russians posing as sleeper agents in the U.S. And this is what drives the whole mystery for Howard Hargrave, as he gets reintroduced in the episode. He says, hey, I think my Scotty was replaced by a Russian sleeper agent.
Mm-hmm.
which that is the only thing thus far in the entire Redemption series that may have a tie back to the Blacklist. Everybody was talking about this episode because they're like, oh, is Red really a Russian? And that's why Red's the imposter, because Red might be one of these Russian sleeper agents. And that's why he always says, my country, your government, et cetera, or your country, your government, et cetera, et cetera.
I really liked this episode. I just thought it was a cool concept. I thought the entire crux of the story was really good. And it was interesting to watch it play out. So I was a fan of this one.
And it was good to see Tom, who had no problem after his wife died, go over and hang out with coffee shop girl and start to mack on her. But here he's literally in the shower with his fake Russian wife and says, hey, you know, we can't do anything. I'm married. So at least we know Tom actually does care about Liz and Agnes.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm with Tom on this one, but I get where he's coming from. Sure.
Yeah.
I'm kind of the mindset, playing doctor right now. I'm playing dress up, and you know, I gotta do what you gotta do for America. That's kind of where I was at that point.
Now I have to say though, this episode, at the end of it, when Nez goes to the drug dealer, you're kind of like in the back of your head, oh come on, like you're really gonna play this drug thing again, like with wrestler and I'm glad that actually this actually pays off.
Yeah, it pays off. Yep.
At the end of the series. So kudos to them for actually making this pay off and not just being some kind of side thrown in plot on the end. So I thought that was a really nice job.
I was worried about that too. I'm like, no, but that one actually worked out. So it was all right.
Yeah. So if there's any episode of Redemption you watch, like if you're like, I am not watching the show, I hate Tom, blah, blah, blah. I know there's people out there that are like that. This is an episode you should just watch. Just watch this one episode. It's really, really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I really liked the idea, the concept of it. I mean, I know we've seen stuff like that in other shows, but I thought it was done really. It was very clever. What's the next one?
Then we moved into four, right? Four was Operation Davenport. And no, they did not go to Iowa in this one. This was actually an interesting concept. We have the U.S. is actually storing people that they want to torture and get information out actually on U.S. soil. There's a maximum security prison in New York, and they have a guy who basically busts in on a reinforced steel front semi, like a battering ram, to break these people out. And we find out that there is something going on with trying to expose the operations of a guy who is buying missiles. But the only way to do that is if he can actually hack the NSA computer to get information that the NSA is actually hiding in order to frame somebody else. So from an NSA concept perspective, I thought this was a really great episode. And the way they go about this is that there is a secret key party. No, not that kind of key party, people.
What kind of key party are you talking about?
Apparently there are seven, I guess, USB sticks that are the keys to the internet. And every so often, all seven of these people that own these keys have to get together in a Faraday cage to reset the keys and encrypt it. And this is what protects the internet from hackers getting into anything and everything across the globe.
This is a true thing. I meant to look that up, and I did not.
I did look it up, and it is a true thing.
Get out of here!
It is.
Holy crap, you learn something new every day. I did not know that. I have literally studied years of IT, and I did not know that. That's pretty messed up.
It's not exactly the same way that they portrayed it, but yes, the concept of like master keys exist, and that's how the internet is encrypted and protected. So yeah, really, really cool twist. The guy, obviously, that we're chasing the whole episode, he's actually trying to exonerate himself and prove what's actually going on. And I think this is probably the best of the Solomon and Tom show. There's a scene where they're breaking into an apartment, and they just killed two guys. The cops show up at the apartment, and then Tom has to like drag him out and pretend he actually lives there, and Solomon's there, and he poses as a plumber. And I thought this was really funny.
Yeah, those two together were actually a really good team.
The best line was the, what's the maximum sentence for fixing a racist man's sink? It was so good. So yeah, definitely the Tom and Solomon show in this one. They needed more of that, I think, in the series overall. Absolutely. What did you think of Operation Davenport? Cool concept, cool story?
I liked it. It's one of the weaker ones for me, personally. I just thought it was more of a, okay, I liked it. You know, I didn't hate it. I didn't dislike it. It was just somewhere in the middle.
But there was the big thing that happened in this episode, and that is that Scotty found Mr. and Mrs. Phelps. What did you think of the mythology part of this side of the story?
This is the one where they found her? or found him?
Yeah. Scotty has the PI chase him down and says, hey, you're Mr. and Mrs. Phelps. You know, tell me about Jacob. And they're giving him the story about Jacob.
That's right. Yeah, that was an interesting twist. That means whoever, which we know now is Howard most likely, orchestrated Tom's disappearance, Jacob's disappearance, Christopher's disappearance. Oh, my God. All these, that guy's disappearance, Mr. Stubble. They went through a lot of trouble. And basically, a guy took a fall from murdering a child he didn't murder. So that was pretty messed up, man.
It was messed up. Apparently, though, it wasn't the actual Mr. and Mrs. Phelps, because their child had a birthmark and Tom does not have a birthmark.
Right.
Scotty clearly remembers that there's a birthmark. How could you after all these years? But you're a mom. I suppose it's fine. And
seriously, I'm going to cut you off. A mom would remember, friend. A dad would remember. Parents remember these things. Maybe you wouldn't because you're a bad parent, but most parents would remember.
True.
I am a bad parent. Good call.
I am. And then because of that, we find out that Howard actually set the whole thing up. The private investigator worked for Howard. The people worked for Howard.
Yeah, that was very – and I guess I jumped ahead because the story that I was talking about comes later. But I just like how that all connected. That was just kind of a cool – when you get a little bit of Tom's backstory, that was kind of cool. What's the next? Oh, is this episode 5 we're on now?
Episode 5, your favorite episode of the series.
Go ahead.
This one is an interesting concept. They actually traffic high-powered technology for the government on commercial airliners. And they're actually trafficking something, or supposedly trafficking something, because a militant group has kidnapped a woman who has some intel about a giant machine gun, we'll call it. And as they kidnap this plane and they're trying to divert it and get the information, we find out that, of course, that he is not actually all in the, what do you say, playing with a full deck of cards as it comes, because there is no big giant machine gun. The girl actually has no information or intel about it, because he just wants to get back with his girlfriend and uses his buddies in order to steal a plane in order to make that happen. So the reveal of the episode at the end about this whole stalker situation was a little bit over the top, but episode 5, from a spy gadget, Blacklist Redemption, Tom Solomon, I think this was probably another one of the better episodes, especially Mr. Solomon in this case, because he ends up ejecting himself with one of the bad guys out of the plane into the middle of nowhere, Alaska. They're freezing because they have no coats or anything. I almost said no clothes, but no coats. And he tells this really, really great story about when he was growing up, about how they had to choose between either spending money on the heat or spending money on food. And one winter it was really, 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 really cold. And so they needed both heat and food. So mom takes out a loan from a loan shark. And then, of course, they couldn't pay back the loan. So it was the first man that Solomon actually killed because he wanted to take care of his mom. And so he was obviously using that to torture the guy in order to get information on where the girl and the other guy were. So really, 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 really great story. Almost could go toe-to-toe with one of Red's rhetorics at that point, Red's stories.
Yeah, that story was great. That was the highlight of the series, honestly. For me, that was the highlight of the series. He just played it magnificently, and he's really subtle with his torture. And there was no pool balls or anything, so I really like that. So this was the episode where I actually had to message Troy. I normally don't message Troy during the episode at all. I just like watch it. But I love this episode. Absolutely loved it. I'm like, now they got their footing, man. They know what they're – this is going to be awesome. We're going to ride it out. And then it turned into a Lifetime movie. And I got pissed because I love this episode. I'm like, no. I was Darth Vader for a minute. No. Why is it a stalker thing? Why do we go that route? It was so cool. Everything about the episode was so cool. And then that happened and I wouldn't want to say ruin it, because there's a lot of really cool moments in it. The airplane scene was great. Those guys working together on the airplane was great. Trying to figure, you know, having a little bit of Passenger 57, having Tom throw a little Wesley Snipes in his steps kind of thing was great. And Solomon obviously was great. So there's a lot of great. And then that happened, and I'm like, no! And I had to text Ryan to be like, this just pissed me off. I'm just letting you know. I just got pissed off.
Yeah, it almost kind of ruined the series at that point a little bit because it was so good, especially the when they're doing the flight attendant spiel and mm-hmm. going back and forth. I mean, the two of these guys together were just fantastic. And then even the stuff with Scotty and Howard and how it's all coming together. And then the stalker thing, it was like, why did you do that? Why?
And I'm sorry. I'm sorry to anybody listening that loved it. Look, I think there's a lot of great in this series. Like this has some potential. I think it has potential. Absolutely. You know, you only get 8 episodes. There's not a whole lot you can do in 8 episodes. They tried to tell a whole story, but that episode in particular was great. Like they freaking nailed it. And then I would put it up against most episodes of The Blacklist. That's how I just thought it was great. And then that twist happened. And I just, my eyes went in the back of my head from rolling. Just whoo. And I was seeing behind me. It was weird. Yeah. So that twist did not work for me at all.
And this was, it's kind of sad because it kind of takes you out of the episode because this is the episode kinda. Where.
It did take me out. I had to stop it because so I could text Troy.
But this is the episode where we find out that Scotty and Howard and the company used to communicate with each other via code set. And the code set comes from comic books.
That was and really so, clever, by the way. That was really cool.
Super yeah. clever. So they get the code set. Tom steals the code, gives it to Howard. They're trying to decode it, and it's like complete garbage. So now as the audience, you're going, okay, Howard's crazy because he doesn't actually have the code set. And Tom finally goes, I'm going to go tell Scotty everything, walks into the office at the end of the episode and sees that she's got a comic book on her desk, and it's a different book. So Tom actually goes and buys the book, decodes the message to find out that, oh, Solomon's been watching him, and now Solomon has kidnapped Howard from the hideout. Where is this going to lead when we get into the next episode?
Yeah, that was a really cool twist, too. I like that quite a bit. That basically, Tom got him captured.
Yep.
Know, that was clever. Hey, but you know what? We do know now that spies have stalkers, too. Now we know that. So there you go.
Number 6 was Hostages.
This I could go longer if you want me to.
No. Hostages was a weird one because you have this family. I believe they were called the Burtons. Mm-hmm. A husband, wife, and kid are kidnapped because a guy, De La Rocha, I believe was his name, wanted to get back his family member, quote-unquote, because it's obviously like a mob situation. And they have a prisoner, so it was like a prisoner exchange type episode. But you find out that LaRocha himself actually wasn't the one in charge. It's the insurance man that actually owns the insurance company. He's literally hiring people to steal his clients so that the insurance policies will pay off. And then he gets a cut of the proceeds at the end. Talk about slimy, weaselly. I mean, this was just like a bad, bad guy to begin with. That he would put these kids in trouble. And the kid is actually the hero of this episode because he's the one that somehow is a pickpocket. Never saw that coming. Had no setup for it to happen, but he's the one that steals De La Rocha's phone. And then that's how they're able to track him and find him and make sure they get back their asset mm-hmm. that they put back out into the field. So from that perspective, that's kind of the case of the weak stuff in this episode. Nothing really exciting about that. But this is where we have Howard in the hospital. He's kidnapped by Scotty. Scotty's taking him to a treatment facility, which isn't really treatment. more like shock therapy, torture.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard for her to make the case that she's not bad at all when she's torturing her own husband.
Exactly. And I think this is where they're really trying to get their footing as to this the war between the Hargraves. And it just becomes really interesting when you find out that he's Howard is dead set on exposing everything at this point. Scotty has Solomon track Tom. Solomon's got Tom literally in the sniper rifle sights, finger on the trigger. And then we get the big bomb drop that Howard says, Scotty, Tom's your son. Whoa, we didn't see that coming.
Yeah, it was a big bomb drop.
Never thought that reveal would happen in the first season.
I didn't. Well, I thought it would happen in the first season. Honestly, I thought because they only have 8 episodes and they don't know what's going to happen, I thought it would happen. But I didn't think she would outwardly know. I thought it would be one of those things like a closing moment where she finds out and then fade to black. That's kind of what I thought.
So did you like the reveal and the way it was done?
Yeah, because I wasn't expecting it. Anytime you get surprised, look, it's hard to surprise people that watch a lot of TV. It really is. It's hard. And I think these guys know that. They've done a lot of TV. They know that their audience is smart. Their audience is keen. So they know that that we know what's coming a lot of times. So they're trying to find a way to surprise us, and they did that. I was honestly shocked that it came out like it did as quickly as it did. So, yeah, surprised. And that's always a good thing.
So now we know Scotty knows, but Tom doesn't know that Scotty knows. And Howard's still in the hospital. So let me get into our two-part finale called Whitehall. So we're going to find out what Whitehall really is all about. And this is where we find out that Whitehall is actually a man who's building the quantum computer. And he's basically been working for Scotty slash Howard all these years, trapped in a secret bunker in a plastic bubble, writing all of his equations on the walls and stuff. And this is when Tom finds out that Scotty knows. And so he tries to like figure out a way to backpedal out of the situation. And we have Howard still in the hospital. And here comes to the rescue, the FBI. Mr. Cooper joins the cast, and he comes in to save Howard to get him out because he's being held against his wishes without any cause or things of that nature. We also have Liz kind of helping out from afar in this episode. She chats with Tom in order to make sure Howard can do what he needs to do. And then actually Howard ends up running into Liz at the end of this episode. So we have a father-daughter I guess, situation there where they're having a conversation and it's just nice to meet you. And so I thought that was a really cute scene between Terry O'Quinn and Megan Boone.
It was a cute scene.
Really, for the first episode of Whitehall, it was a lot of spy caper. Tom actually shoots at Scotty at one point. I was like, whoa, he just shot at his mom. That's kind of interesting.
That's going to screw up Christmas. That's what that's going to do.
It totally is. And then we have, what was it? This was the de facto camp setting up for the big finale, right? So you have Solomon and Nez, and who am I going to believe, and who should I go with? And at the end, Nez decides that she's going to stick with Tom because they had the bond over the Russian spy drug situation back in Independence. And then Solomon stays on the Scotty Hargrave side, which sets up the big confrontation for the finale. I thought the finale was actually pretty solid. I love the holding everybody hostage in the boardroom. Nobody's leaving. You have the back and forth between Scotty and Howard. I love that he does the little press conference to say, hey, everybody, guess what? I'm not dead, and I'm going to go in through the front door while they plan this backdoor operation where they take down the Artex network completely in order to infiltrate the facility. And then, of course, it plays out that you find out that they're going to rescue Whitehall, who was kidnapped by Scotty, and they rescue him, tells the board what's going on. Howard's now back in control. Scotty has been debunked and kidnapped and arrested or whatever you want to call it, put in jail. And then we find out the big twist at the end of the episode.
Now, do you think Howard is all bad then? Now,
well, see, that's the thing. So,
was he setting it up to get it back from his wife? Because here's the thing: with that twist, I don't understand because he was already in control of it before his plane went down. Right? I mean, she assumed control after his plane crashed, so he had control of the company. So, I don't understand why this happened at all.
Well, remember when we did the, what was it, episode 20?
Now maybe I'm missing something. It's very possible because it is.
Episode 21 or 22, Scotty's already in charge of the company, and that was before the plane crash, right? Because that was season 3 of the Blacklist.
That's right. You're right. That's right. Okay. That makes sense now.
She basically had him like committed or something because he was crazy and then tried to off him to get full control of the company outright, I think was the plan.
Gotcha.
And then, in this situation, I still don't know if he's good or bad.
Or if he just set her up.
Or if he just set her up, exactly.
To get the company back.
That's the key.
Uh-huh. No, I really liked, I thought this, it's like a two-part, it's a two-hour episode. It's very Tom Bourne-like. I mean, it's basically just a chase movie. I mean, it's really just a chase movie. There's not a whole lot of story. It's more about people going from place to place, trying to get the thing. And a little exposition tossed in. So it's more of a chase. But I did like it. I thought it was really cool, really fun. They obviously, like I said, I think they found their footing in the back half, made the show a lot more exciting, made it its own thing, gave it its own identity to separate a little bit from the Blacklist. And I think that worked. Now, you did have some Blacklist characters that popped in, so you still have that connection. I loved Cooper's scene because we haven't, last few episodes of Blacklist, haven't had Cooper be able to do a whole lot. I love when he's just going, he's like, get him out. Let's go. I had just like how he just threw his authority around. I thought that was pretty fun. And Liz was only there for the emotional attachment. And I thought she was great. Like I think they have a better relationship on this show than they do on the Blacklist.
They do. They do. I actually believe that they could actually be a family, lovers on this show versus the other one.
That's funny. It's weird how things work. But yeah, I did like it. I like how it played out. And I really like that as we got to the end of the episode, you know, Scotty got to emote. She got to show more sides of herself. She got to get more involved. She was doing more of what I think we thought was going to happen with the character. And really, we just got a lot more out of her. It wasn't just so cold and icy and, you know, mission focused. And it worked. It played well. I loved all the little asides from Terry O'Quinn. He's like, "I'm coming for you, honey." I mean, just all that stuff was great.
We looked at the camera at the end of that. Yeah. It was at 7. Yeah, that was fantastic. The characters themselves, we're going to list all of the music up on the show notes, the blog post for this episode. So it's at theblacklistexposed.com. Just look for the Redemption episode, and we'll have all of the music listed there. So you can add that to your playlist if you'd like. Some really great ones were used throughout the course of the show, like Junip's After All Is Said and Done in episode 2 when the guy is dying and Tom's trying to save him as he's going to get the computer. That was really great playing there. Jose Gonzalez's How Low plays when the big bomb is revealed in episode 6. Great use there. And I especially love Jacob Phelps's Unholy War, which closes out the season because as the song's playing and the big twist and reveal is happening with Kat, Scotty's assistant, you hear Let Love Lead You Home. Oh no, let redemption keep you warm. So you better run. You better run.
Wait,
and run she does. Simply along.
The singer's name is Jacob Phelps?
Yeah.
Really? Jacob
Phelps? I'm sorry. No, Jacob Banks.
Okay.
I did that in my head. Oh my gosh, I did that in my head.
Yeah. I mean, Jacob, I don't. This
Jacob
is,
Banks. Sorry.
You're welcome. This is where I get to call you a dum-dum, and you earned it.
Yes. I totally did that. That's funny.
Congratulations. Yep.
Jacob Banks on Holy War.
Dum-dum.
All these names that keep in our head. So, just a rundown of the characters in real fast. Two people that we haven't talked about yet is this Daniel Bigelow, male gigolo. Scotty has a little piece on the side.
Yeah. I mean, this guy's got the best job in the whole series. I'm just pointing that out. But yeah, that was an interesting twist. What did you think about that? Was that a little over the top or was that interesting?
I have to say, out of all the characters, I mean, I love what they did with Nez specifically, but Kat, the assistant to Scotty Hargrave, I thought she was the most interesting character in how her loyalty stayed with Scotty the whole time until she runs into this Daniel character. She comes to pay him or something or give him an NDA to sign because of the things that Scotty and Daniel, a.k.a. his name's Trevor, talk about. And when they're having that conversation, she ends up kind of falling in love for him. And so she's now sleeping with her boss's gigolo. And yeah. I thought that was kind of an interesting play because I wanted to see how the Kat Scotty dynamic would come out of that. And we did get to see that. Scotty was a little forgiving, I think, than I probably would have been. But it really did play out in the end. I think the good thing about the show is that everything that we thought was kind of like groan-worthy when we saw it in the moment actually pays off in the end. And that was something they really had going for them in the series.
Yeah, because that whole connection made me, when it first happened, I'm like, oh, is this, we're going to have lifetime moment number two? Is that what we're doing now?
Exactly.
And then it actually paid off. And I thought that was actually, even though it was a little outlandish, it was a kind of a cool twist. I liked how it ended.
Although, yeah, so Dan-
let's just get away from the 12 hours earlier thing, though. You know what? I think that would have been more exciting, her reveal of how she gets her ass kicked, if we just saw it play out. Knowing that something happens to her early, that I didn't like knowing that, I guess.
And you're
we just
the
did
whole
that in the episode prior. We just did that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we're waiting the whole episode to see where it fits in. So you're looking for it. And it's not there.
Takes you out of it a little bit.
The last 2 minutes is where it shows up. Like, come on. If it's going to be the last two episodes, don't do the 12 hours earlier.
Please. I mean, it didn't bother me. I just didn't think it was necessary, I guess.
Exactly. I think it would have been more powerful had you not known she was stabbed and limping and whatever, shot. And yeah, how many times can you walk by the gaggle of school kids? Hey, that woman's bleeding.
Yep. Yeah. Somebody should have called. Well, you know what? In this day and age, nobody probably wouldn't call the cops.
That's true.
Who are we on? DeMont?
Daniel Trevor liked his character. I thought it was a cool twist that Howard actually hired him to be part of Scotty's entourage. And then Kat was a really good ad. I'd like to see Kat even come up on the blacklist. I thought she had some interesting dialogue. She could probably play a little bit with Tom and, You know, she reminds me of what was that TV show that was the
I'm sure it was Alias or Lost or Fringe.
No, it was the Player. It was the Player. She reminded me of the lady that ran the house.
I never watched the Player.
Oh, see, I watched two episodes because it was Wesley Snipes. But Anakin
The Wesley Snipes show. Oh, I'm thinking of something. There's another show. I know who you're talking about now. Yes. Of course I watched that because I love Wesley Snipes. I've already referenced him once this episode.
There you go.
Always been on black.
Dumont kind of picked on him a little bit in the first episode because of the whole stereotype creepy IT guy with the googly eyes at the swimmer. But I think as the series went on, I think he kind of mellowed out a little bit. He was very straightforward, and he had a really great episode where he's trying to get information from his brother about the whole internet hacking keys situation. So I love that it gave him a little bit of depth in that episode. But other than that episode, it almost felt like Dumont was sidelined a little bit towards the back half of the series.
Yeah, he didn't really land. I told you that before. He was the one character that didn't really land with me. Still didn't. By the end of the series, didn't land anymore. I mean, he's just a side character. I think maybe some people thought he was going to be like a Rom, and I don't think that's what his intentions were supposed to be. He's just the computer guy on the team. And that's it. I didn't really... Like, if you brought him back, didn't bring him back, it wouldn't matter either way to me. No offense to the actor. It's just I don't think the character was really given enough to do.
Yeah. I mean, the gadgets were cool. I think the front half of the series, he was more in there. Mm-hmm. And then the back half of the series, it's like the gadgets kind of disappeared and it went more towards mythology. And it just didn't seem like there was much for Dumont to do other than say, yep, they're turning left on this street and they're turning right on that street.
Right.
So.
Or correct.
I think Nez, Rowan, Tawny Cypress played this character. I think this was the best shiny moment of the series, to be quite honest.
Yeah, she's the opposite effect, because the first four episodes, I don't think she was that relevant, and I was kind of getting concerned because she's really good in the part. And then the last four, I'm like, she really came into her own as a character on the show and really was extremely engaging. I really liked her by the end.
Especially for Blacklist fans, where we had three episodes of her. Before the Scotty Hargrave episode, she's the one that beat Samar senseless on the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh, I hate that Nez Rowan character. Like she can
in a
die.
Good way. It's that good hate. You know what I mean? Where you're like, oh, I like her. She's so bad. I like her.
So the fact that she has this moral dilemma about should she trust Howard because Howard got her clean and tying it into the drug problem, I thought this was a really fleshed out character. I'd love to see her continue somehow, even coming back to the Blacklist every now and then. Mm-hmm. I think this was a real big win for the series.
Yeah, great. I mean, the whole team was pretty solid, but she's definitely a standout. But my favorite character of the show, who's that?
Oh, man.
Who is it? Who?
Mr. Solomon.
Give that man some dialogue and just watch him play with it.
Wow. I mean, he's got to come back to the Blacklist. I'm sorry. In some shape or form, he's got to come back. The character is just so good, mm-hmm. and Eddie plays it so well. It has to happen.
I was telling my wife that, he's so good at what he's doing. Because Dembe is one of my favorite characters on the Blacklist. And remember, let's not forget, he was going to kill his grandkid. I mean,
yeah,
and he beat the absolute piss out of Dembe. So by all accounts, he's an awful human being. But he made me like him a whole bunch, and I forgot about all that Dembe stuff. That's how charismatic his performance is. So I really dig Solomon.
Until he captured Tom.
Nope, still dug him.
And then he goes to grab the sock, and what does he have?
Pool balls.
Yeah.
Still dug him, man. I was still like, I get it. I was on his side by that point. I'm like, I get it. I see where you're at.
Yeah, I mean, the liners, the fugitive moment, the story, the racist man sink fixing, all of the airplane. I mean, he was just spot on. Like, so we need more Solomon. And whatever happens, just make a spinoff about Solomon stuff. That would be fun.
I just want to, at some point, if they bring the show back, I don't know what they're doing yet. I haven't heard anything. I'm sure we'll find out soon. But if they bring it back, I hope they do like a flashback episode and show how the hell he survived that plane crash.
Yeah.
That was pretty amazing. I'm like, did he just jump out of a plane? Yep, he sure did. All right. I mean, I'm sure he just held on to the guy and pulled his parachute. But I still thought it was a pretty ballsy and cool move to do, and I would like to see that play out.
One of the favorite scenes of the series.
I'm sure that'd be like a million-dollar scene to shoot, but still, I liked it.
Scotty, I think we said enough about her, but yeah, I guess disappointed. I thought it was going to be a bigger role.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I hate to say that because I've said before, I love Famke Janssen. I hope I said – I think I nailed it, Troy. I finally got her name.
I think you finally got it right.
I finally got it right. I know a lot of people say it's Janssen. It's not Jan. It's pronounced Janssen. But I don't think she cares. I think she just like accepted that Americans are not phonetically accurate. So I like her. I like her a lot as an actress. I've liked her in tons of stuff. Even Hemlock Grove, she's the best thing about that show. She's the only good thing about that show. And I just – but she has a certain – you know, a lot of actors are stronger at some things than others. She is manipulative and seductive better than most people on TV or film. She's just really good at that. And I would have liked to have seen that utilized a little bit more. And
like in like in episode one.
Yes. I mean, yes, it was creepy and it made me go, ew, because we know Tom is her son. But it works in the crux of the show. And, you know, at first I'm like, don't do that moment. Don't do it. Give us a wink. Do something to acknowledge that Tom realized it. That's really what I thought that scene was missing. I didn't think it was so bad that they did it. It was just more of, we need some acknowledgement that somebody knows that this is not right. I would have liked that toyed with. I mean, if you're going to, like I said earlier, if you're going to tiptoe that line, let's do it. Let's make her make us uncomfortable. Because the one thing I will say about TV, and I know a lot of people probably listening will say, well, we don't want that because that'll make us uncomfortable. You know what? Uncomfortable makes you take notice to a lot of degrees. So if you can ride the line, you can play it well, uncomfortable will make you interested in the show, engaged, excited to watch a show to see what are they going to do to this episode? You know, that kind of thing. It gives you moments to talk about. And in a show that's trying to build a foundation, I think that's very important. I think that would have led to that. And having her have more of those moments, whether it be with Tom or whatever, just those moments where she gets to show off why Scotty Hargrave is a force to be reckoned with, I think would have helped the show. And I don't think she got enough moments, and therefore it kind of affected the character a little.
Agree. What about Tom? Did he pull it off for you?
Tom was fine. It's not fair, man. I know you keep calling him Tom Bond. I don't think he has the same gravitas as a Tom Bond. I like the family aspect of the character. And when he's with Howard and when you see him having a reaction to Scotty and stuff like that. But I don't know. There's something about the spy stuff that just doesn't – I don't necessarily buy a lot of the time. It feels scripted to a degree unless he's working with Solomon. I think maybe it's he works better when he has somebody to play off of. You know, at time of the character, maybe he – because he's very muted and just focused. So the look on his face is very similar throughout. When he's engaged with somebody, then you get a lot more interaction. Like when he's going back and forth with Nez, when he's going back and forth with Solomon, I think that really helps the character. So it's just not – he wasn't bad, wasn't great, just fine. You?
Yeah, I think his scenes with Howard, I think that with Terry O'Quinn, I think those were very well – prescribed, and he acted exactly like he needed to in those scenes where he's like the son and he's trying to find out the information. I think when he acted with Famke, it was a little strange. That didn't really play off for me as well. But yeah, everything with him and Eddie, I would just watch a Tom and Eddie show or a Ryan and Eddie show.
I would. That I thought they fun. Were great together. Yes, they are.
They needed way more of that happening. So it's good that we had the plumber scene and we had the stewardess scene, but we needed more of that as they were doing the heists and breaking into places too. Towards the back half, Solomon and Tom grew apart, obviously, because that's the way the story was going. But I think when that happened, it kind of lost a little bit. So luckily, the mythology was cool enough that it covered up that miss. But those first episodes, yeah, without the Tom and Solomon interaction, I don't think the show would have worked.
Yeah, it definitely helps. And they are great together. Like, I would watch a buddy show of those two. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. And then, of course, Terry O'Quinn's Howard's character.
We talked about him a lot already, but still.
Yeah, highlight of the series. Perfect casting. Terry O'Quinn did an amazing job, as always. Okay, I mean, just
let me point out, Terry O'Quinn, not amazing casting. Terry O'Quinn, put the guy in anything, and he elevates it. He was in Hawaii Five-0 and made Hawaii Five-0 riveting television. Now, I like Hawaii Five-0. It's generic TV, though. I mean, it's just something you turn on. And then you go about doing your laundry and stuff like that. And you just pay attention every once in a while. It's not meant to be involving. But every time Terry Quinn was on screen, I'm there. I'm involved. I'm in it. He's just one of those actors. He's just, like I've told you before and told people on the show, he is one of my favorite actors of all time. I've been a fan of his since the early 80s or late 80s, whenever it was that Stepfather came out. And I haven't looked back since. He's just, I love him and how he handles things. And here he just, he nailed it. Nailed every aspect. And I was starting to believe Howard. Damn it. I was wrong again. I hate when I'm wrong.
We don't know if you're wrong or right. Remember, he just wrong. He just wanted access back to the technology.
Pretty wrong. I felt pretty wrong. What did you think about Tom being duped? Because the whole show is based around Tom. And, you know, by the end, he's duped. I mean, he basically, we feel like he's been duped to a degree.
Well, all she says is, what's on here? And he's like, the truth. So Tom doesn't know in that closing moment whether or not it's good, bad, different. He doesn't know what the information is. He just knows that Kat's stabbed to death.
But we know he's been duped. I'm saying, how do you feel about a guy who spent the last three, or actually the whole series, the whole eight episodes, trying to help Howard, and then come to find out that Howard was actually framing Scotty? How do you feel about that? Do you feel any less involved with Tom? Do you feel like he's responsible for anything? Does it bother you with that development? Because he ended up being the problem.
That's the one part where I was like, okay, now this is the blacklist, because Tom's going to be, well, who do I trust? Who's got the information? Who do I actually go to? Who's going to actually tell me the truth? And it's like, oh, that's the Liz story. I was like, I don't want it to be that. I just want it to be that Howard just wanted to get the company back. And yeah, it might have some truth on there that Howard was actually behind all the framing, but Howard's still a good guy. So I'm holding out hope that Howard's still a good guy.
You think?
Just for Tom's sake.
One thing that I think is that, you know, because we were debating if Howard is bad or if Scotty is bad, even though we know Howard framed Scotty, there's still a chance he's a good guy. It's just the only way he can get the company back and he can get Whitehall out or whatever. But she is directly associated with Solomon, who is a known bad guy. So, I mean, he is a bad person. Fantastic to watch, but a bad person. So, I mean, that in itself kind of makes you lean toward Howard as maybe the good guy still. To me.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you are who your friends are. That's what they say. All right. Well, so overall, we did talk about pretty much everything and every character. Where does it sit with you now that the series has come to an end? We graded it. I gave it about a B minus. What'd you give it?
A solid B.
Okay. So yeah. Do you want it to come back? And if so, what would you do the same or different?
Well, I definitely want Tom and Solomon working together. I think that's fantastic. I think that worked. Terry Quinn was fantastic. You know, Nez's character gives a lot of heart to the show. It could come back. I guess the question is what do you do? What's the story? That's where I'm kind of scratching my head, because it kind of wrapped itself up. I mean, all the big answers are there. So unless you truly go to a procedural concept of just case of the week stuff, I don't know what you can do there as far as a mythology show going forward. So I almost have to go back to, you know, periodic.
Yeah. Well,
unless there's something else where we can, and this is where this is the weird line that you have to toe with this is a standalone show. Anybody can watch it and pick it up and not have to know what the Blacklist is about. And maybe this is because we can't see it any other way. But unless there's something else in the Blacklist universe that happens that could generate a jumping off point for another eight episode kind of thing. Like, is there a reason why the quantum computing needs to be used on the Blacklist? And then, oh, yeah, remember that quantum computing thing? Here's another eight episodes of that quantum computing thing. So that's kind of where I'm kind of struggling in my head of, do I really need any more in Redemption? I love the characters and I love the way they work with each other. I just don't know I don't know what the story element is to make another season.
Well, I mean, there's always a way that they could find something to work. I mean, getting Scotty out, setting Howard up, that kind of stuff. All that stuff can lead to.
That's the same show then. It's the same. It's the reverse of season one. Nobody wants to watch that.
Maybe. I disagree that nobody wants to watch that. Obviously people want to watch it. If they want to do like another eight episodes and or 10 or whatever and do it as kind of like while Blacklist
a break filler.
Yeah. Break filler. I think that would be great. And you could make that work. Cause I think there's definitely moments of greatness in the series. Every show that, and it has a harder job than a lot of new shows, because it has to work in two worlds. It has to be its own thing. And it has to kind of be a Blacklist thing, because it has Blacklist in the title. Which is why I think that hurts it to a degree. They could definitely come back. I think get Scotty back to the character she was when we saw her on the Blacklist. I think that would help a lot. Make her more prominent. For her being you know, the lead, one of the lead characters, her and Tom are the lead characters. I feel like she didn't feel like the lead, I guess. So put her back and give her the chance to do some things. And I think that could really help. Obviously you get Solomon back. I don't know how they would work together again. That could be, I mean, they already didn't trust each other to begin with. Now it's going to be doubly hard, but I think you could play that up quite a bit. If it's a break filler or maybe like a summer thing, you know, during the summer, keep you engaged with the Blacklist world. I think that could be cool too. So there are ways to go about it. I'd be open to it. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely open to it. Just I'm having a hard time finding a story to tell. That's where at this point, because I just watched the finale last night, it's, you know, I'm good. It's good. It's a good closure.
And that's why you're on the podcast and not working in the writer's room, my friend.
Exactly right.
Because they don't want me there, otherwise
Red would be the mom, right?
Oh, Jesus. All right. I can't wait to get back to that conversation, which is going to be a pretty fantastic 2-hour premiere from all accounts, from Book and Camp. I've seen Megan on interviews. I've seen everybody talking about this return, that it's just fantastic. And we're going to have a panel right after it. So, man, I hope some cool stuff happens from it.
Yeah, don't forget to email us, theblacklist@goldenspiralmedia.com. Let us know if you are coming to the panel. Again, Saturday, April 22nd at C2E2 here in Chicago. We want to make sure we know that you're in the crowd and schedule some time to hang out after that. So please email us right now, theblacklist@goldenspiralmedia.com. You're listening on your mobile device. You're on your computer. Type up that email. Let us know you're coming so we got your name on the list.
Show's not over, so don't go anywhere. But please remember to download the Blacklist Exposed app for iOS and Android, and be sure to go even deeper into the mystery of Red Reddington by visiting our Blacklist partner site, theblacklistnbc.com. With that, we'll be right back with our special agent intel right after this. Are you sick of the endless, poorly realized remakes as we are? Then take a listen to Remake This Movie Right, where we take a classic movie, figure out what works and what doesn't, throw a dash of humor at it, and then we craft our own remake. So by the end of every episode, we will remake this movie right. Recently featured as a podcast to listen to by the AV Club, you can find us at RemakeThisMovieRight.com or your podcast app of choice. Every movie you love will get a remake someday, and only you can make it better.
Special Agent Intel for the Blacklist Redemption. We have Jen up first, and she says, I'm almost caught up with the series, and I've really enjoyed it. I didn't expect to, but the story kind of works for me, and I enjoy watching nearly all of the characters interact with each other.
Nixie. That's your new name, Nancy. And Nancy says, I've enjoyed it. They did a great job keeping us guessing on who to trust with Howard and Scotty. I keep going back and forth. I still don't know, Nancy. Curious what the finale will reveal. You put this beforehand. Terry O'Quinn is fabulous. Love Solomon being so bad. Dumont makes me laugh. Love Nez's take charge attitude, and it's been great having Spy Tom. It's very different than The Blacklist, and I've liked it that it wasn't a carbon copy of it.
Agree. Judy says, parts of Redemption I liked, parts I didn't, and I think it started out weak. The first few episodes were really not very good, though the episodes got better over the series, and last week's was pretty darn good also. Also, I still see no character in the show actually striving for, quote-unquote, redemption. I don't mean to beat a dead horse about that, but did the powers that be change the premise of the show, or are the NBC marketing team and the powers that be not in sync? Lastly, I have no idea if there will be more episodes of Redemption or not, but man, how in the world would this fractured team be able to put back together and work together again? Lastly, I'm confused about why Scotty and Howard kept asking about Whitehall when they both seem to very much know he is a man. Unless I misunderstood something. Finally, I'm overtired with the premise of the Blacklist characters searching for their past or their lost families. I really don't care a twit about Tom Keene's lost family, but maybe that's just me. On the other hand, at least in this series, Tom Keene had more to do than hold Lizzie's hand and feed Agnes. His character is much better as an operative, preferably as a bad guy, but apparently that ship has sailed. I think his character days on the Blacklist should be numbered unless they plan to use him differently. I'll be watching Redemption finale tonight and looking forward to it.
Ron Davis, I gave it a go 3 times throughout the season. Couldn't get through any of them. Had to give it 3 thumbs down for me. Wow. 3. He went and grew another hand just so he could go, nope. No. Yeah.
No. Marilyn said, liked it, not Blacklist, but thought the series overall was great. Just got better every episode as it went along for me.
I agree with that.
I agree.
Betsy, I love Redemption. It is a thrilling, suspenseful spy show that utilizes Tom Keene's exceptional skills. I'm excited to see the finale tonight, but I hate to see it end. My hope is that the show can continue next year. There are many possibilities with this unique storyline. I also hope Tom appears on the Blacklist. I like Tom and Liz together, especially when they are both utilizing their badass skills. They can find good daycare for Agnes and carry on. Just do like Walking Dead does and just never bring Agnes up.
Exactly right. And it's true that remember the one scene with Tom and Liz working together kind of Ocean's 11 style.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you said, like Tom works better when he's playing off of somebody versus playing by himself.
I agree.
I think that's true.
Because I said it. That's why I agree.
Sheila said, I have really enjoyed it. I'm also happy it's different than The Blacklist. That would have made this show doomed to fail. The writers did a great job in taking this in a different direction. Although we already know some of the characters, the show still has its own story and theme. It moves quickly, and Redemption gives Tom a chance to be accepted as a good guy. I never thought I'd say this, but I like him now. I need to comment on the statement I have read on these threads for a long time that because Spader is not in more scenes, it's killing the show. If James wants more screen time, he would get it. He is, of course, a huge reason we all watch. Does he need to be in every scene? I don't believe so. Mm-mm. This has grown into more of a story than I think we planned, and that adds to the interests because we now have Aram, Dembe, Kate, Samar being central to the Blacklist story, as well as Harold and Wrestler. Of all the characters woven by the writers into a complex and thought-provoking story, the Blacklist may have started out to be Elizabeth Keen and Red coming into her life. Now it's well-rounded. And I think that kind of happened on Redemption as well, Aaron, because we were expecting it to be the Tom and Scotty show, and I think the Nez character kind of came up, and then Howard's character came in, and again, it became the ensemble cast, so nobody mm-hmm. really is the forefront character. There's not a clear lead.
Right. All right. Kara says, I'm wishing I'd kept up on it, but real life, what you going to do? I'll be marathoning the whole thing this weekend before Blacklist starts back up.
And Sharon said, I found it unwatchable. Bye-bye.
Damn. I mean, damn, Sharon. Just damn. So, you know, there are varied reactions, really varied reactions. Are you surprised by that?
No, I don't think so. I think there are people that came into it going like, oh, I just want my stuff. And, you know, Dembe Poison Red. Why do we have to wait? Why do we have to wait? Look, everybody, you would have waited whether Blacklist Redemption existed or not. Just point blank. That's the way TV scheduling works. Sweeps end. Everybody takes off in March to launch the spring series.
That's not fair. I mean, I think people gave it a chance and it either worked for them or it didn't. That's all.
Yeah, but what people were saying was, is like, why did you prevent my Blacklist watching by making the spinoff? They made the spinoff so that we had some time to kill while we waited, because whether the spinoff got made or not, the wait still would have been there and you would have had 8 weeks of nothing.
Yeah,
so but this at least gave you 8 weeks of something.
We just went through a bunch of comments and nobody said that. So I don't know what you're talking about.
In other threat, Twitter.
Oh, gotcha.
Out in the ether.
I just mean in terms of the series, it feels like it's divided, much like our country. Feels divided. And so people like it. Now, do you think that falls along the lines of, do you like Tom Keene? Do you not like Tom Keene? Or is it just a show thing?
Oh, I'm sure it has everything to do with Tom Keene. Whether you like Tom Keene or not is going to totally depend on whether or not you watch this episode, series.
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, because I'm well on verse that I like Tom Keene as a character. The relationships always bug me, but I like him as a character. But I think he was fine.
There are people out there, though, that are like, Tom's in the show, I'm not watching it. Versus the people that are, I'm going to watch one or two episodes, and if it doesn't grab me, then I'm out.
Gotcha. So, I see what you're saying.
At least give it a chance, and then you can make your opinion. But just to say, I'm not watching it because of Tom, I don't understand that at all.
Yeah, and this puppy's on Hulu, so you can watch the whole thing now. The whole series is on Hulu, so if you haven't watched it, go check it out, all 8 episodes. And if you pay the extra $2, you can watch it commercial-free, which is what I'd do. What?
More importantly, if you don't have Hulu, you can sign up for a free week, watch all 8 episodes, and then stop.
Exactly. Catch up on Fargo, too. That's a great show. All right. Well, that's going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us and 13 Reasons Why on Netflix. My God.
Oh, my gosh. So good.
I'm so sad. All right.
Still recovering from last night. Holy crap.
I'm so sad. I miss you, Hannah Baker. That's going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TheBlacklistGSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed, and we use the show's hashtag, TheBlacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or if you're coming to the C2E2 panel, again, April 22nd here in Chicago, don't miss it.
Yeah, Come hang out. I am going to make fun of Troy, I promise. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen from the website, but if you are really on the go, make sure you download our app for iOS and Android, powered by Spreaker. You will also find all the intel and analysis about this episode for The Blacklist Redemption by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. Big thanks for listening. And don't forget to answer our profiling question for next week's episode. Do you think it was Dembe that poisoned Red?
Yeah.
I don't.
The Blacklist at goldenspiralmedia.com. Email us if you're coming, and we'll see you next week.
Ah.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.